to another episode of the Monday Mile podcast. Today we're in central London and we've managed to tie in a mile with one of the greatest athletes of our time, one of the golden girls of athletics. There are three words I'd like to use to describe this role model. She's elegant, the consummate professional, and an icon of our time. A former heptathlon athlete, an Olympic gold medalist, a rock star mum, and a dame. She's humble and gracious, and in the words of Gabby Logan, she's tenacious and funny. Denise Lewis, welcome to Monday Mile.
Hello, how are you? Good to see you, looking fabulous.
You too, fresh faced after a little commute into London.
Yeah, but you know something? I do it so often, it's just water off a duck's back. I just love the city. Despite being a Midlander, this is the place that I still call home, to be honest, you know.
Not shy of a little commute then, and I believe that stems back to your former days as an athlete. Do expand.
Coming from Wolverhampton, my nearest club, the big club, you know, the one that everyone's sort of like, oh my gosh, that's the one to go to, was Birchwold Harriers in Birmingham. So I used to do like an hour and a half journey across from Wolves to Birmingham and then back again in the evening. This was by the age of, you know, 14. Already at 14, I was doing that commute. My mom didn't drive. So it's just what drives you, what makes you tick. And mine was just to be better. And being part of Birchwold Harriers training at Alexander Stadium, it just felt like it was a step closer to my dreams and what I wanted to do.
That is a serious commute for anyone of any age to undertake.
But on my own as well, you know. Back in those days, I was that kid, we called it latchkey kid. You know, my mom had to trust me to be going to the venues and taking myself places because she just had to work. My huge sort of kit bag with school books, because then we used books and not these tablets.
I remember the savage backpack that probably has given me posture damage even now.
There you go. Yeah. All 8 to 10 kilos of school books. So that was my commute, Wolverhampton to Birmingham, big duffel bag. And I was literally just tearing through the station just to catch my bus.
That would be some sight as you progress within your career. Oh, there she goes.
Yeah.
Denise Lewis with her backpack.
Yeah. It was something that I would later do when I'd already become a sort of Olympic bronze medalist. I made that change, left my old coach and moved to Holland.
No way.
Yeah, so I trained in Holland, you know, all that lead up the road to Sydney, actually uprooting yourself and being based in a different country was sort of new, but that's kind of my life, Amy, you know, I kind of just do what I need to do.
Did it feel like a risk making that step to going abroad?
I like to think it was a calculated risk, but I just knew I couldn't stay in the setup that I had in the UK. It just wasn't working for me anymore.
And on cue, the rain starts. Brilliant.
You promised me no rain, girl. What's happening?
Why are we walking up a hill?
And it's literally about to tee me down. Well, this is Primrose Hill. And I love, love, love this place. I mean, if we turn around now and just look at the views, you've got the London Eye, you've got BT Tower, the Shard. You can see the London skyline. And it was one of the first sort of places I came to when I moved down to London. I know, I am big. I managed to find a flat, which is a stone's throw from here. And I was just like, wow, this is just tremendous. This is living.
This
London
is living.
Life. This is London life.
London is incredible, isn't it?
Coming from the Midlands and Wolverhampton in particular, I love that city too, but nothing much happens. It isn't the bright lights and bushy tail and everything else. This is, it's a hard slog, people trying to make their, you know, ends meet. And I was fortunate to move here at a time when I was about 24, started to make some money, and I put my payment down on a flat, and who knew that place would explode.
That is unreal and extremely good timing. So did you ever train here at Primrose Hill?
Sometimes. This is, as you can feel in your legs, is a great place to run. It tested my body. So you often have I've probably walked me back in those days. Old school.
The
giant headphones.
The giant
and where
headphones.
Would you even put a Walkman to run with?
Well, just shove it down any pocket you can find. Or hold it in your hand invariably.
Yeah.
Just kind of hold it in your hands. And then you just kind of take a route and start running.
So I've bizarrely snowboarded here before.
Get out of town, maybe?
Well, where else would you go in London with a absolutely rocking massive hill?
That's true.
2018, Beast from the East.
Yep.
It was like...
amazing.
Yeah, it was a paradise for Londoners that like to ski and snowboard. So why heptathlon?
I have been asked that question so many
times. I mean, that's
times.
One of the boring questions I get asked, like, what's your favourite resort? But genuinely intrigued. There's a lot going on there, Denise. It's not just running in a straight line.
It is not. I was already competing for my club. And, you know, on the weekends, people used to just pull out last minute. We didn't have someone in the shot put or someone would not turn up for javelin. And I'd be there for long jump or hurdles and relays. And they just sort of said, oh, come on, we need a point. So I was a good club athlete. I loved competing for my club. And I just used to join in. And I had some skill. And I had tried them, you know, in my formative years as a means to just try everything, try all the events. And I found I had a competency that just allowed me to pick it up. And then my coach said to me, look, why don't you try a heptathlon? And I said, well, okay, let's go for it. Didn't look back. I loved the camaraderie, you know, between the girls. It was just magical. So it's a competition within the competition for me. The mindset, competing against yourself, but you're competing against the other heptathletes. And you're having to manage that mindset, which is so important in heptathlon, knowing that you haven't got seven great events.
Yeah.
You may have three or four. You're okay in another couple. And then you're trying to minimize having any disasters. And so
that's disaster management of the grandest scale.
It is. It really is. Because usually it's the person who avoids having like three no jumps or, you know, three no throws or disastrous throw that may make it on the podium. It's not about being fantastic at all seven. You know, no heptathlete really is. And so understanding that mindset when you're coming into your weakest event, knowing that you've got to really pull something out of the bag. And it's not till later on in my life, you know, I'm an old woman now.
Oh, I'll tell
you about that.
Don't be silly.
But, you know,
you did just say that your son was far too young for me. So there you go.
Yes.
That shows it that you are far too young.
So it's not till later on in life you realise, you know, heptathlon is really life skills. It is learning to manage the pitfalls that you may come across in life and what are your tools to get out of danger.
Now, that's really interesting because essentially it's been a tool that you can use to set yourself up for later life. Yeah. What would you say the characteristics are that made you stand out from the rest?
So I think my strongest one is mental toughness. And that's not trying to be boastful. It's just that what I bring to the table when I'm competing is that ability to trust the mind, that I can go so deep within myself that I bring out the best performance under pressure.
Yeah.
And I had to have that in Sydney. My body, I couldn't rely on my body. My body was in tatters. It was not, I didn't arrive in Sydney.
Race fit,
ready. I had been injured. And so I got there having to trust my mental fortitude. And
wow.
I know you think, well, that's part of the game anyway. But for seven events, not knowing whether your body's going to hold up and just zoning in on the skill that would get me through each of the events and trying not to think about the outcome, knowing it was the time of my life. That was it. You know, 28, you're sort of ripe, ready to take it on. I've got everything in the back pocket, experience, disappointment, success, all the tools. I just had to deliver it despite having a body that was a little bit rubbish.
There's a lot of trust in there as well.
has to be trust.
Did it relieve the pressure going into it, knowing that you weren't in the peak form of your life?
Not at all. Not at all. No, it did not give me any sort of solace or comfort or deviate thinking that, well, everyone's focused on other competitors.
Go on, take me to the final deciding event and talk me through what's happening inside your head.
Well, 800 metres, it's the least favourite of most of the heptathletes. And I knew I just had to hold on for dear life for two laps of the track, knowing that there was the Russian Pokorova, who was a really competent and strong 800 meter runner, and she was in her first Olympics and really just chomping on my heels. I went into that event in the lead, having had a good javelin. And so the mindset was, now or never.
Yeah.
It is now or never. You haven't done the conditioning, you haven't done the work to run a good 800, so you're just going to be holding on, knowing that she was going to be good.
That is crazy. Like, the only situation I could relate it to my snowboarding career and qualifying for the Olympics, but I'm taking myself to sports day. I'm on the track and it was 100 metres. There's all the beef, you know, when you're at school, like, oh, she's faster, I'm faster. And, oh, it was the relay. I remember just being handed the baton.
Yeah.
And there was something within my mind that was like, you can run faster. Like, I was already running fast.
Yeah.
And then something went like that. And my mum said she watched, and I just catapulted forward. So I think
supercharged.
There's this crazy decision-making process as well with how much physically you're willing to give.
Yeah. There is, and at the Olympics, you give everything. That's why you're there. And, you know, I knew, having been a bronze medalist, that I was not going to get a better opportunity. And so it is about taking your opportunities when they arise. And I did it.
Does it seem a long time ago now?
It is a long time ago. So much has happened since then. But, you know, if you ask me to take you back to that moment, to those feelings, to those raw emotions, of course I can just conjure them up like that. You know, it's just, it's instant.
Inbred.
It's inbred, it's in me, you know. It's a lived experience that I will absolutely never forget because it changed my life.
So magic. You now work on the other side of athletics. There's been some incredible athletes in my time watching telly, London 2012. Do you feel proud?
I'm immensely proud, you know, for the event and for obviously those women that are walking the path that I walked. Of course, it just is like, wow, I know what they're feeling. I understand that emotion. So yeah. I was obviously commentating on Jess when she competed in 2012. That was just awesome how she dealt with the pressure. I mean, that was mammoth. It was so huge. But Jess is like that. She has the ability to just go inside herself as well. And, you know, you ask for commonality. We have that mental toughness. She's really, really a strong competitor and a strong woman. She really is. And, you know, KJT, absolutely adore her. Again, several generations apart, but I have that identification with her in so many ways. And so when she needed support just after Rio, I felt that it was my duty, a real sense of duty, to guide and help and offer assistance when she needed it. You know, why wouldn't you?
It's so beautiful to hear those words, because I think so often in sport, between the generations, there can be a sort of quite a competitive, narcissistic trait that can shine through with, you know, certain sports. I've luckily not experienced it myself, but I have seen it. But it's beautiful to be able to be that support and be that role model for that next generation coming through.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, once you've had your time, why wouldn't you want someone else to experience that elation? Or it could just be one phone call that might make a difference. I remember taking that mindset into my behavior after sort of International Women's Day a good few years ago. And one of the sort of mission statements was reaching out to another woman, you know, elevate, support. And I just haven't forgotten it. I just feel that's what you should do. And not wait, and not always wait for someone to say help, or that they're in the, you know, the doldrums, that you actually intervene or offer assistance just for the hell of it. Because when you do that, sometimes it unlocks that person to think deeper about what they do actually need and what they want. Mm. And that was the same with Kat, you know, it was just, yeah, it was a good time to help, offer
to
help.
Step in.
Yeah, to step in.
So actually yesterday marked a year to go until Paris. How are you feeling at a year to go?
Just excited. For me, it's never just a new year. It's an Olympic year.
You made me grin from ear to ear.
It is that. It's just like, okay, who are going to be the next gen? That next gen, what are they going to offer up? What treats are they going to delight us with? What stories are going to get told? And I'm always, you know, excited, just beaming.
New talent on the block.
Yeah.
Who are we looking out for?
Well, let's see who's fit, because that's the thing. Talent only goes so far. It's who can manage themselves during that pressure. So from an athletic point of view, we've got an abundance of middle distance athletes right now that are have obviously got medals, but new ones just under the, you know, the periphery that are waiting to explode, i.e. Gemma Rikes of this world. You know, she's a really good 1500 meter runner. She's had championship experience. She's had a lot of injuries, really bad COVID attack, which hampered her progression a little bit. Recently just changed her coach, but she had a great race the other week at the London Diamond League, and she looks like she's back. Could she join the likes of Keely Hodgkinson and Laura Muir and pick up a medal at the Olympics? I would love that.
You give me goosebumps. I can't wait. It's like 3 weeks, 3.5 weeks of just incredible sport. But on that, let's transition into your career now. You've been retired for quite a while in the athletic domain.
Yeah.
What has been your most fulfilling physical challenge?
Ooh.
Do you still get a kick off doing physical mind mapping tasks?
Do you know something? And I'm going to tell you exactly what that was.
Okay.
So during lockdown, we managed to get a show off the ground commissioned, and it was called Don't Rock the Boat.
Yes.
And it was two teams that had to technically race against each other, red team, blue team.
I remember this.
Yeah. And so we rode from Cornwall up to Scotland.
That is disgusting.
Open water.
That is horrific.
It was horrific. And I kid you not, I take on these challenges thinking, okay, it's not going to be too bad.
Yeah.
You know, I pick up the technique, okay, but it's so much more than the physical doing. Yeah, again, having to support other members of the crew that aren't up to the task physically or mentally. So you're doing the lion's share of the work.
You're now a coach.
Yeah, I'm coach, I'm mentor, mentor, I'm mommy.
Psychologist.
Psychologist. But also having to do the rowing. Man, I cannot begin to tell you, when you've got novices rowing in open water, you know, the waves are yay high. You're rowing through the night.
Wow.
Yeah, 20 hours of rowing in shifts between the crews. And if I read the small print and the detail of what the task was, I may have opted out.
Yeah.
However, I did it, conquered the open waters, and actually feel, like you said, just like, geez, who knew you could do that, girl?
I actually, yeah, I it doesn't sound doable. That's the thing about some of these challenges, right?
Yeah.
I feel like they're just getting more and more ridiculous.
Yeah, because
I've tried rowing up the Thames once, and I was like, hats off, Helen Glover, because that was hard. I ended up sunbathing.
Why am I not surprised?
Kicking back.
Well, this is what we had on the show.
Chatting to the captain.
Right, we had people with their cameras, their phone cameras, and they were like, guys, you're supposed to be rowing. Or they were stargazing, because absolutely there were moments when the sea was calm, you look skyward, yeah, and you've got the beautiful constellation, or you see a shooting star.
Do you still get a kick out of training?
Yes. Yeah, I'm still in beast mode.
I love lie. That. Beast mode.
Yeah, I'm still in beast mode.
What does beast mode look like for Denise Lewis? Because, I mean, the first thing you said when we arrived at the bottom of Primrose Hill was, let's go up it.
Yeah.
And there was the
high pace, knee.
Yeah, the bit pace. Yeah, I like that.
I'm a gym bunny. I love going to the gym. I do a lot of hybrid sessions.
Yeah.
I just mix it up.
Yeah.
But I don't lift heavy weights, but I do a little bit of barbells. Circuits. I did this one session with my PT, who is amazing. And the reason I have a PT,
yeah,
is so I don't have to think.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. She just box instructions at me. It's all online, so it's virtual.
Oh, online. Yeah. So just do it at home?
Yeah, do it at home.
Okay, great.
Nice and easy. It's a drumming session. Have you ever had those weighted drumsticks?
No.
It's amazing. It's a game changer.
Weighted drumsticks?
Yeah.
So like physical, like so actual drums?
So it's not drums. You use the sticks and you use a cushion and you bash the hell out of the cushion.
No way.
But you do like a burpee, like four hits to the cushion into a burpee.
Yeah.
Repeat, you know, 20 seconds, 30 seconds. Then you do like three shuffles, burpee, drum again.
Yeah.
We dovetail that with some shadow boxing as well.
Very cool.
It's a wicked session.
That sounds great.
So heart rate is nice and high, 165 beats.
How long are we talking?
40 minutes.
Nice, yeah, just bang it out.
Yeah, bang it out.
I think that's the thing. People make the gym, fitness, wellness, inaccessible by thinking you need to do an hour in the gym. Now, mum, four children.
Oh gosh.
Incredible.
Tiring.
How do you find the balance to find the time for you to get that training in? And how important is it for you mentally to be the best mum?
I don't know. The best mum, that terminology, I think you're as good as you're trying to be the best you can be. I don't know whether I've ever hit those heights, but I'm passionate about trying to be that all encompassing, but knowing that you get things wrong, you make mistakes, your tolerance isn't always high, and hence why going to the gym in the morning for me is essential. It starts my day, it gives me energy, and by the time sort of eight o'clock in the evening rolls around, when they've just literally bled me dry from demands, I can just sit back and go, you know, I've completed my tasks, got my heart rate up, done my exercise, I can give them what they need, cook, clean up, and the rest of the evening's mine.
Rockstar mum.
Rockstar mum.
You had your fourth child at the age of 46. Denise, that is serious inspiration for any female. Someone like myself, I'm 32. We're getting on. How? Why? Unreal.
Why? We'll come to another time, but thank you. And I have heard this a few times, I'll be honest, that it is inspirational to many women. I think in a society where women are working longer, they're obviously embedded in their careers and family just doesn't come to them immediately, for whatever reason, and knowing that there is an opportunity to still fall pregnant in your 40s, I think is inspirational. It's definitely hopeful.
Yeah, hope.
It's hopeful. Although, you know, the medical professionals do stipulate it's high risk.
Yeah.
I was high risk from the get-go. But I just felt I could do it. And again, I'm using that word, mindset. I was determined that when I had my baby, and thankfully he was healthy, I was fine, I was going back to work quite quickly.
Yeah.
So he was like with me at sort of 10 weeks, my first live broadcast for BBC. And it was intentional. It wasn't just it happened. I was like, I'm going to get back out because I need that for myself.
Yeah, I was going to say it.
I need to understand that I can still be dynamic. I can still mobilize myself and my mind, be prepared and organized. Because having kids does slow you down. It can if you let it.
Yeah.
Because it is hard. It's not easy. And so you've got to, I just had to get myself into a position where, we're going to make this happen.
What was harder post-birth? The physical adaptation, getting back to full strength, or the mental ability to thrust yourself back into that working environment?
I would be lying to say that physically I didn't cope well, because I did. I started to prepare exercising during my pregnancy, and it was nothing crazy. I wasn't wanting to run 5Ks or anything like that. I was cautious, but I was doing a lot of functional training. I was determined to prepare myself to get back. And so that little bit of exercise during pregnancy and allowing myself to get used to my new baby again, then get back into very moderate exercise, was part of the plan. And so it wasn't hard. I'll tell you what I did do, because I knew myself and my husband, we've got other family members. Yeah. We don't both need to be tired. So I literally removed him from the room, So it was me and baby, and that was our little mission. Get to know each other very quickly, understand his needs very quickly. My husband could go off and snore in another room. And it just worked. It worked for us.
I love the process of just getting straight back at it. One of my really good friends, Kaz, literally did exactly the same thing. 2 weeks later, flew straight to Qatar for the World Cup, worked on that. And I think it shapes you also as a parent, because you're in and you're not changing your life around them.
Yeah.
Damehood, you've set yourself well up for that, Denise. How does it feel to have been recognised?
Oh, gosh, honestly. Amy, when I had that letter and it landed on my door with all the posh sort of inscriptions and the stamp, you're just like, oh, what's this then? So I sent back the paperwork and I almost forgot about it until I got a phone call on the 31st of December saying, congratulations on your damehood. What does that mean to you? And this was like, oh my God, it really happened. It wasn't just, it wasn't just a fluke. It wasn't someone deciding whether I was going to get a damehood. It was actually game on. I cried like a baby. I kid you not. I was so immensely proud, because I think when it happens so far after, my performance or what I've been known for, it means something different. It's a real recognition of service. And I'd like to think that I have given that service. But, I'll never say that I deserved one, but someone else thought I did.
And you've continued that service.
I'm very passionate about school sports. I've always, since retiring, I've tried to put back and give back and invest my time. Goodness knows how many people that are in their sort of 20s and early 30s that talk about, oh, you came to my school, you visited my school when, and they're standing there with their own kids, etc. That you've impacted other people's lives through action.
Majorly so. What are the perks of a damehood? I saw you in the Royal Box at Wimbledon the other day. Is that the ticket in?
I don't know. That's about who you know.
That's about who you know.
I don't know. The damehood, I just like to think that when I croak and I leave this wonderful world, that I'll have an inscription above my name, which is just lovely for the family.
It is nice.
It's really nice.
Beautiful.
So I'd like to think I should be exempt from any parking in and around London, but I don't think it works like that.
I don't think it does. You mentioned how you've hopefully left a mark and how you've been to a multitude of schools. You've inspired the next generation, but I think you've inspired a generation wider than your field of athletics. A good mutual friend of ours, both Ebony Rainford Brent, speaks so highly of how you've influenced her. How important do you think it is for young girls in sport to see people of all ethnic races and abilities and disabilities in the media?
I think it's everything. It shouldn't even be a conversation. It should just happen. It should have happened a long time ago. But I like to think that if it gives, you know, other women confidence to feel that they can put themselves forward, think that it's actually something they'd like to do, that there is no barrier to stop them achieving that. We know you have to see it to believe it, right?
I love it.
That's why I think it has been important seeing that shift in the young presenters that are coming through. It just means it's great. This is how it's supposed to look. You're identifiable to a whole host of young girls who are watching. Everyone's got a backstory and can identify with one of the faces that they see on TV. So why shouldn't there be a face that looks like mine when there are girls out there competing or maybe not even in sport, but just want an opportunity to present or be on the telly? Just why not?
And it goes wider than that, the sport itself.
Yeah, you're right. It's a sort of a game changer, and it should be something that should echo other industries where, let's say, advertising industry, where sometimes you just don't see enough people with disability in adverts or, you know, sitting on board meetings. Yeah. There's a whole plethora of industries that need to get up to speed. And so, listen, there have been women, the pioneers that have come way before my time that have sort of laid the platform, you know, but now we seem to be getting a bit more traction. And we just need to keep that portal open so we get more numbers of women just at every level wanting to step up and get an opportunity and give it a go.
Give it a go.
Yeah.
Whilst giving back in the process as well. I think that's the biggest thing I can connect so much to at the moment, is surrounding yourself by good people that are open and excited for you.
That's right.
To see you progress. And I feel that in you for the athletes that are coming up. And it's a beautiful energy to be able to share.
I just think why be limited and why be pigeonholed into one avenue when, like yourself, you can diversify.
Well, thank you very much. I'm going to take that little compliment. And on that, we are going to do a swift turn and walk back up the hill, because this is the Monday Mile. We've probably walked more than a mile, and I would expect nothing less from you, Denise Lewis, than to walk up here casually three times.
Actually, I'm tempted to just break out into a jog, because...
You know what? I'd love that.
Would you really?
Yeah, I love running.
Let's see if she can...
Oh, no. Oh, no. Poor filmer.
Slippy hills as well.
Are we going to jog the whole way? This is absolutely brilliant. I actually shouldn't, because my hamstring is bad.
Let's not do that then.
Yeah.
I don't want to be the cause of spoiling your summer fun.
Of my marathon coming up.
Yes. Exactly, girl.
Yeah, no, we've got to look after that. So, Denise, as we are on the Monday Mile podcast, we have to ask all of our guests what their relationship is like with Monday.
Monday?
Yeah, do you like a Monday?
I do love a Monday. Usually, 10 o'clock, you'll find me in the gym.
Nice.
I've cleaned up the breakfast stuff. I'm then in the gym doing my Monday mashup.
Any marathons on the cards, or are done with that chapter?
You know, the pressure to do a marathon is immense. It's really, really immense. And also...
Why?
I wouldn't be able to just do it in 6 hours. You know...
You've got to do it in a...
Got to do it in four.
Okay.
Yeah. Got to do it in four, because that's the standard.
That's a sort of acceptable pace, yes. Isn't it? To be fair, anybody that does a marathon, whether it's 4 hours or seven...
Eight. Yeah.
Respect. So I don't think we're going to see you on the London Marathon start line anytime soon.
Only if I'm cheering on somebody like yourself and going, come on, Amy, let's go.
You could pay someone and then that would take you out of the excuse. How about one of your kids? Would you run a marathon with your eldest? Would that be an excuse to do something like that again?
He's quite competitive because they only want to beat me. And so I'm not even sure we'd get through the training without having an argument. But no, it could be a thing. It could be. I'm not going to say never.
I love it. The competitive nature prevails.
Yeah, As always.
It is always a competition. Lastly, Denise, we've made it to the top of your chosen location. Do you have any life mottos or quotes that you'd like to share with our listeners to inspire them to chase their dreams no matter what it is?
Oh my goodness, that's deep.
Open that can.
That is deep. My goodness. Well, one of the ones I like a lot is the idea of why shouldn't it be you? Something good happens, why shouldn't it be you? Why shouldn't you get that job opportunity? Why shouldn't you be the one with a promotion? You know, go for it. I always say, just go for something. What's the worst that can happen? Dust yourself off, go again.
Dust yourself off, just like that.
Yeah. You know, plan A, it's great, but always have plan B and C.
Yeah.
Just in the bag, because you just don't know where that might lead.
Little safety blanket, right?
Yeah.
Always.
Always have a safety blanket.
Denise Lewis, I think we both need to dust ourselves off after that rain-ridden walk.
It was glorious. Thank you.
It was glorious. Thank you so much for your time. Monday Mile listeners, it is a wrap. I really, really hope you enjoyed that one with the Rockstar Mum. All inspiration, all types of information and things to take away from that one. You know what to do. Make sure you are subscribed and the audio drops every single Monday. To be specific, about 12:04 a.m. for those early risers, those people working through the night. So I hope you enjoy this one. It's a wrap. Have a wicked week.